Good evening or good afternoon, however you are. This is Terry from Colorado, KI0RE. This is the NLA Hams Net. Every week at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, we talk about things NLA-ish and Hamish. Tonight, we're going to be talking a little more about antenna fundamentals. And I'll just jump right in. If anybody has any input or questions, please say something. I will stop and give you a chance to talk. Not exactly like a ham radio net, but that's okay. We'll make do because we have a little bit different situation here. An antenna is just something that radiates RF energy out into the atmosphere or wherever you're going to put it. And different antennas do that effectively in different ways. Some antennas don't do it effectively at all. We don't want those because it can load up your radio and actually burn out your finals if you do it wrong. So just as a cautionary statement, get a good antenna. A lot of hams think that they got to get the biggest, meanest radio possible so that they can get out. And then they buy a cheap little 29-cent antenna, they're not going to get out. The best thing you can do is buy an antenna that has some gain. Now, what is gain? That's how much, that's how much energy is going out for the energy coming into the antenna and directing it where it needs to go. Now, a lot of antennas, I have an X50 or X51, Diamond X51 or X50, I can't remember which one it is, and it's a base station type antenna. But on VHF, it has about a 7 or 6 dB gain. And on UHF, it has about a 3 dB gain. That means that whatever signal you're putting in, it actually acts like it's even more of a signal as it goes out. These are finely tuned and finely crafted antennas. And they make all the difference in the world. So you want to be a good ham radio operator? Get a good antenna. One of the things that I would often do as I drove my car, in the early days, I only had one radio, and I babied it like it was gold. And that was my little ICOM ICW32A, which is a beautiful radio. I still love it. I have worn the keys. Worn the labeling off the keys of two of those radios. And when I first started out, that's the only radio I had. So whatever I did, I had to do that. Well, the first thing I did, and the hams told me, and I listened to them, is they said, get the antenna out of the car because the car acts like a Faraday cage. It blocks radio signals both in and out. So the first thing I did was buy a little mag mount antenna. It was a unity gain. It wasn't great. It had a coil on it, so it loaded up just fine. And it was cheap. But just by putting an antenna up on the roof of the car, thank you, sir, I got out because I wasn't inside the Faraday cage using a rubber ducky antenna. So that made a big difference. When I rode on the bus, I would sit next to a window, the window seat that faced the mountains. So if I was going to work down towards the south, I put the mountains on the mountains were always on the right-hand side, so I sit on the right-hand side window seat of the bus. Regardless how many people are in there, I find a way to get to that window seat. And that improved it because I held the radio up so that it would go out that window and talk to the repeaters all along the front range. When I was coming home, we would be traveling to the north, and the Boulder Boulder/Denver area, the mountains are to the left when you're heading north. And so I would sit on the left side of the bus going home. Makes a difference. I'm giving that antenna every advantage that I can give it. Let's see. There was polarization. We talked a little bit about polarization last week. I'm on page 4-6 for anybody who's following along. Polarization refers to the orientation of the wave's electric field. Realize that any wave you send out, any RF energy, has actually two orientations. One is the electric, and the other is the magnetic. And you get to study this real fast, and I've seen some talks by some professors, and they've got a this big, what do you call that? it's a talking point, an objective lesson. And he has the waves cut out, and he shows how the magnetic field is 90 degrees separated from the electric field. Same thing happens inside of a waveguide. Your electric field is traveling along the skin of the waveguide, and your magnetic field is perpendicular to that. So when we're talking polarization, we're talking the orientation of the electric field. A vertically polarized antenna has an electric field perpendicular to the surface of the earth, and that's what the key is. If I have an antenna sticking straight up in the air, the electric field is going to be up and down along that antenna as it transmits, as it sends the RF energy out. And the magnetic field is going to be parallel to the Earth. Well, go by the electric field. A vertical polarization means that the antenna is vertically polarized, and it's vertical antenna. Now, when you think about this, that sounds real easy. But in bending and warping and everything else, things can change, just like you can bend radio waves around the Earth. That polarization can change, and on the other side of the Earth, it might appear to be a horizontal type of a polarization. When the polarization, I'm looking at the paragraph above antenna gain, when the polarization of transmit and receive antennas are misaligned, the received signal can be dramatically reduced, as much as by 100 times. Because the polarization of radio waves doesn't match that of the receiving antenna, less current is created in the antenna. I know this for a fact. There's one of the neat things you can do is point a Yagi-type antenna at a satellite that's coming over and just listen to the people talking. And lots of times you can rotate it slowly, and you'll hear the signal fade out and then fade back in as you go past 180 or 90 degrees or so. Then there was something, there it is. As a radio wave travels through the ionosphere, its polarization changes from vertical or horizontal to a combination of the two called elliptical polarization. As a result, a receiving antenna of any polarization will respond to the incoming wave, at least partially. This means both vertical and horizontal antennas are effective for receiving and transmitting on the HF bands where skip propagation is common. And that's what I was talking about, that it goes up into the upper atmosphere and it's changed a little bit. How do you predict this change? Well beyond my pay grade. I have no idea. I know there's physics involved. I know there's chemistry involved, but I don't know how to do it. So you'll have to forgive me on that part. Antenna gain, the concentration of radio signals in a specific direction, is called gain. Antenna gain should not be confused with the gain of a transistor. Antenna gain increases signal strength in a specified direction when compared to a reference antenna. Gain aids communication in the preferred direction by increasing transmitted and received signal strengths. That's why you see a lot of hams have these great big horizontally polarized antennas that have multiple elements on them. They get as many elements as they can. And over here at the Federal Center, there's a communication place, and it has what's called a log periodic antenna. And no matter what frequency you put on the antenna, it is automatically tuned and ready to go with that frequency. And it will act like multiple antennas. It's really slick. So anyway, back to the hams. They have maybe three elements. There's a, we talked about this last week, there's a driven element. Behind it is a reflective element. And the front of it is a directed element. And the little ones are directed. The ones that are right at the right frequency, they're tuned, they're driven, the ones that actually have the signal coming in on them. And then back behind is a reflector. And those all have to be spaced properly for the frequency that you're using. If they're not, you kind of ruin the game. They go out, and wherever they're pointed, you have a much stronger signal. I want to reference the two figures, figure 4.5 and 4.6, on page 4-7. And you can see that for a particular antenna, and I'm trying to find out what antenna that is. It doesn't say, but let's just say this is a typical antenna gain. When you're looking backwards on it, you have a 30 or 40 dB loss. But whatever's going out at 0 degrees on the first chart has about is 0 dB gain, which means the signal is fine. Now, what you got to be careful is that a 0 dB gain, it sounds like, well, you're not getting anything out of that. Well, you compare it to the losses that you get at on the diagram, a minus 10, a minus 20, minus 30 dB. Notice that anything back towards the back side of the antenna, even to the sides at a 45-degree angle, they get much less. They're up to about a minus 15 dB compared to the signal that's going out the main part of the antenna. Also, there's the second is an elevation pattern, and that shows what this antenna does when you're looking from the side and looking at which way it has the most gain. And notice they got a side lobe and a null that comes back down towards the center and a main lobe that shows it shooting off at about I'm guessing 30-degree angle. All right, back to the talking about gain in the text. An isotropic antenna has no gain because it radiates equally in every possible direction. Isotropic antennas do not exist in the real world. They are only used as imaginary references. An omnidirectional antenna radiates a signal equally in every horizontal direction. That's what my Diamond X50 did. X50A, it's been a while since I had to look that one over. An omnidirectional antenna radiates a signal equally in every horizontal direction. An antenna with gain in a single direction is called a beam or directional antenna. You'll hear all of these terms on the radio. Don't be put off by whether they call their antenna a three-element beam or three-element Yagi or a three-element directional antenna. They're all the same thing. I suppose the Yagi could be different than whatever antenna they actually have, because there's many different types of antennas that will give you a gain in a particular direction, but they're all directional antennas or beam antennas. An antenna's gain is specified in decibels, dB, D, capital B, little d, capital B, with respect to some type of reference. antenna. For example, the abbreviation DBI means gain in decibels with respect to an isotropic antenna. The abbreviation DBD means gain with respect to a dipole antenna's peak gain. Oh, what's a dipole? It's going to discuss it here in a little bit. A dipole is where you have to have a circuit, you have to have a going and a coming. You have to have a loop. It has to be connected. The antenna serves a role to be the interface between the outside atmosphere and the circuit inside. But you still have to have those two. So coax, the center conductor, has a signal going up at it. Well, when you think about it, that means that the shield around the coax has that same signal coming back in. It just protects it going up there. So a dipole, you take the signal that's on the main center conductor on a coax, and you put it out one direction at a certain length, usually some multiple or partial of the frequency or the wavelength of the frequency you're using. On the other side, you connect the other side. You go out the same distance out the other way, and a dipole goes out usually horizontal, so it's horizontally polarized. And that goes out the same length as the other element of a dipole antenna. So just imagine a big T, a feed line coming up the center portion of the T, and then one element going out on the left-hand part of the T, and the other element going out the right-hand part of the T. The left element might be the center conductor, and the right element might be the shielding on the cable. And it all inside the radio, all of that's connected, and all the little electronics are going back and forth according to how the signal is that you're putting to it from the radio. I used a dipole that wasn't quite... The thing about a dipole is looking from the top, it needs to be 180 degrees between the elements. Well, I didn't have 180 degrees, so mine was more like about 110 degrees or 130 or 120 degrees, somewhere in there. And yet, I talked to Moscow, or Russia. I talked to Russia, actually, on that antenna from my house in Broomfield, Colorado. Very good antennas, very cheap. I think that antenna cost me $40. I had to cut it to the right length, bend it to the right length, and check it out so that it was tuned for a particular frequency. That's a dipole. So a DBD, we go back to little d, capital B, which means decibels, and then put a D after it, it means it was the gain is with respect to a dipole. So when I say DBD, I'm telling you that if I've got a 10 dB gain, that's 10 dBs better than what a regular dipole would give me. With respect to dipole antenna's peak gain, discussed below. Gain, like voltage, is a relative measurement between an antenna and some reference antenna, most often an isotropic or dipole antennas. Right on. Yes, they tell that. There's a blue box. Should we talk about decibels? And it goes over the math. And you know what? I'm not going to try and talk about the math because unless I have a board here, I can't really teach you the math in an effective way. I want to encourage you that when you get some book that talks to you about how dBs are, which is dB equals 10 log to the power ratio or dB equals 20 log to the voltage ratio and why it's like that. I'm just going to leave that alone for right now. But I encourage you, that's where you need to spend some time because that will tell you how things are working and how well you can expect your antenna to perform by looking at those ratios. So please take some time to do that. Then we talked radiation patterns, and I went over that just a little bit, the two graphs. You have an azimuthal pattern and an elevation pattern. Well, it's just an azimuth graph and of the antenna in some kind of configuration. And zero is straight out the front of the antenna, and then 90 is to the left, and 180 is to the rear, and 270 is to the right. The elevation pattern looks similar, but of course ground is at zero to zero, and you only have 90 degrees going up. So you've got to turn this in your mind into a 3D object that has a cross-section that looks like that pattern. Then you'll be closer to what that antenna is actually doing. Okay. Pattern strength, radiated energy, 4-6. The region of a radiation pattern in which the antenna's gain is greatest is called the main lobe. And if you look at that drawing, there's kind of these lobes that go out. You're better in that direction, like the elevation profile. It has a lobe that kind of goes out at about 30 degrees. Your reception and your transmission signal are going to be better in that direction going out at 30 degrees and bouncing off the atmosphere than they are going to be straight across the ground or straight up in the air. It depends on the antenna. Regions of lower gain are called side lobes and nulls, where the gain is at a minimum. So there's a couple of places in 4.6 and 4.5 where the antenna gain starts to inch back towards zero. For instance, at 180 degrees in figure 4.5, there's an asymptote where it's just pointed towards the middle. Well, that's a null. That antenna doesn't do well right there. And different antennas will act differently. They'll have different patterns, so be aware. The ratio of gain in the preferred or forward direction to that in the opposite direction is called the front-to-back ratio. The ratio of gain in the forward direction to that at right angles is called the front-to-side ratio. Antennas with high front-to-back and front-to-side ratios are useful in rejecting interference and noise from unwanted directions. Now, there's a lot said right there. If I am here in Colorado and I'm trying to work a guy, let's say he's in Seattle. Well, I don't want some real strong station out in Iowa to be overriding him, or Nebraska, or South Dakota. I don't want him coming in over this guy. Well, having turning my antenna towards Seattle actually helps me reject him, so I can hear the guy in Seattle better than I can hear the guy out to the side, because the side lobes are not as big as the forward lobes or frontal lobes. Any questions? This is a good place to stop before we start 4.3 feed lines and SWR.
Yeah, this is KC3HVA. Yeah, a reminder about polarization is interesting. Today I was working in the basement, and I have a little radio that came with my battery-powered electric drill and impact screwdriver, and it runs off the same batteries. And I was working in the basement, a lot of iron pipes in the area. Reception was not good, and it has just a tiny antenna about 4 inches long that flips up. And it was very noisy. So I started playing around, rotating the radio, and it helped some. But if I tilted it about 30 degrees off of vertical, it cleared up nicely. And I had it up on top my vertical, my vertical deep freeze. And everything was going great until my wife came along and opened the door, and the whole thing landed on the floor. It did work pretty well for a while. It's almost indestructible, so it's still playing, but it didn't break anything.
Wonderful. Thank you. I appreciate that input, Jan. I had a similar thing the last 3 days. I had just a little radio. It's the one I bought to listen to HF if I could. It turned out not to work at all, so I wouldn't recommend it, so I'm not even going to talk about it. But I took that radio. I was listening to a local AM station because my son doesn't have any AM radios at his house. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that have millennial roots that they don't. They don't listen to it that much. Anyway, I would turn it, and this is what you got to think about. You got to think in all three axes. So I would set it up. I would turn it, and then I would lay it down 45 degrees, which you can do, and I would turn it that way. I would lay it flat on the counter and turn it that way. So all of these different ways I could position the radio, I would look for the best reception, and then I'd leave it right there. I knew that that would be the best reception. When I carried it out into the garage and carried it over to my son's sprinkler, they were gone to San Diego, and I decided to take a look at their sprinkler. It wasn't working. I had to remember which way it was oriented in relation to the axis of the earth. And then as I carried it and I started to turn, I would turn the radio so it would stay strong. So it's a similar thing. You mm-hmm. found what you needed and you left it there, and it worked real well until the door was open. Well, mine worked real well too, until I moved to a different location in the yard or back into the house. I had to reorient it. So good point. Yeah. Okay. Feed lines. What's a feed line? Could be just about anything. And let's see, there's a figure here, figure 4.7, which shows some different types of feed lines. Twin lead, 300 ohm twin lead, 450 ohm window line, coax, double shielded coax, rigid hard line, which is good stuff, semi-flexible hard line, which is also very good stuff. And they have some little drawings of each one. And I could talk a lot about the different feed lines. Every one of them has its use. Why? I know I can hear people out there. They're saying, why? And so I say, why, do you ask? The reason is that if you look on here, the twin lead, which is very much like the old antenna. I'm talking to some people that are probably much younger than me, but for all of us old people, we remember in the early days of radio and TV, we would take some feed line that had two elements, one on each end of it, and it was about a 300 ohm twin lead. That's called twin lead. And we would hook that up to the TV and then hook it up to the antenna, and then suddenly our reception was much better than it was just a minute ago. Why do we use 300 ohms? That's what the natural, at the frequency that twin lead feed line was used, it's about 300 ohms resistance in there, and you need to be putting your signal into something that matches. Now, is that 300 ohms? Could I stick a voltmeter on there and get 300 ohms? No. It's all based upon what frequency is being used. And if you remember from our discussion before, a higher frequency, depending upon or any frequency, has two components. It has reactance based upon capacitance and reactance based upon inductance. And what you're talking about with 300 ohm twin lead is at air at broadcast TV waves frequencies, it has about 300 ohms. and your antenna was set up to do that. Now, that's another thing. Then came along coax, and so we'd attach coax, but you couldn't just hook a coax to the feed line and have it work for you, because coax has a specific load in ohms for the frequency that you're talking about, which is TV broadcast frequencies or any frequency. Some of them, like RG59, it's 75 ohms. So you're hooking a 75-ohm antenna to a 300-ohm or 300-ohm antenna to a 75-ohm coax. And you had to put what is called a balun in there. It's a balance-unbalanced type of thing, and it tends to match. On one side, it has the right resistance to, at the frequency that you're looking for, it matches the 300-ohm output on the antenna. And on the other side, it has a connector to screw in coax, and that side has a 50-ohm balance. It's balanced at 50 ohms. And so by using a little balun, you can connect a 50-ohm coax to a 300-ohm antenna and be just fine. Now, if you haven't lived through that, it's probably doesn't make any sense at all on you, and I lost you, but you're going to come up against that. You're going to come up against it. I'm sorry, did somebody say something?
I think it was just background noise,
okay.
Terry.
Thank you, Jan. The next one down is ladder line, and they call it window line here. I call it ladder line, and it's 450 ohms. Well, you got to balance that out too. But what you'll find is that a straight dipole will have about 450 ohm resistance. And so ladder line can go right up to a dipole and work. Now, will it work for you? I don't know. You should test it. But I've seen it work without any kind of balancing or worried about it. So ladder line's good stuff. Don't discount it. You just have to use it properly, and you have to think about this stuff as you use it. And then we go down through everything below that is either hardline or coaxial cable. And then there's it's different types of coaxial cable. And one has a double shield. Well, you remember I said there's a signal going up the center conductor on a coax, and it's coming back down on the shield. Those tend to cancel each other out, and you don't get an interference. But you do get some interference once in a while because the shield is on the outside. So you put another shield in there, and you just ground it so that it's not carrying any signal at all. Well, that one will tend to act like a Faraday cage and keep out really strong signals that are by it, because it really takes a strong signal to overcome the shielding on a coax just by the nature of the beast. And then hardline, the reason hardline is so good is because shielding on a normal coax is braided. So they've got filaments running one way, and they maybe have six or seven sets of them, and they might have four wires per set. And they braid them in, so it's a braided thing. On hardline, it's an aluminum outer shell. It's solid, so there's no way to leak out little bits of energy, RF, and it's solid. So it's really good stuff about rejecting stuff next to it. And then the semi-flexible hardline is the same thing, but they put an outer jacket on an aluminum tube that they put on around the wire that acts as the jacketing or the outshielding. They make it so you can flex it a little bit, and they put some rubber on the outside or some kind of polymer that protects it from the weather. Really good stuff in the weather. It'll stay up there all day and without any problem whatsoever. You don't have to worry about it. You have to worry about the connections, but the hard line will be good for years. Okay, I talked about those. The most popular is coax because you do a wire in the center conductor surrounded by the insulation, the center insulator, dielectric. That's another thing. Any cable you get, look on it, and it'll say it's rated for 75 ohms like RG59 or 50 ohms like RG58. And that's saying that the normal capacitance between the center and the shield, the dielectric, which is a foam plastic type stuff, gives you about 50 ohms of at the frequency that you're going to use it on, about 50 ohms across the two. If you use a mag mount antenna on top of your roof, you got to string it in somehow. Well, when you string it in, you got a door. And the door will pinch it and kink it. And when you think about a kink, if you take your finger and point it straight up and then at the lower knuckle, bend it, suddenly you've got a bend in it. Well, the inside of that curve has a different property than the outside of the curve. So wherever you got that kink, two things. You're bending it, and that has an effect, and then the pinching will crush that inside plastic foam so that the shielding and the center conductor are closer to one another. Well, that will change the capacitance. So you got to be aware of that. And I've been told that real hams cut holes in their roofs and thread through there so they don't pinch their feed lines. Good information, but you can also take your car down when you want to trade it in, and they'll say, you can't fix that hole in the top, so we're going to take off $1,000 to fix that hole in the top. And they'll do it. They'll do it right away. So be careful. If you're going to own the car and you're going to drive it until it dies, much better to drill a hole in the top and seal it up really, really good so that no water gets in there. Then we talk characteristic impedance. I'm not going to go over a bunch of this. Z0, it's measure up much of how much energy is carried by the feed line. This is not the same as the resistance of the conductor, so it's telling you something different than I just told you, so they're right, I'm wrong. If measured from end to end of the feed line to understand characteristic impedance, it talks about a few things. Most coaxial cable used in ham radio has a characteristic impedance of 50 ohms. Coaxial cables used for video and cable television have 75 ohms. Open wire feed lines have about a Z0 of 300 to 450 ohms. And is it important? Yes, it's important. Listen to what they or read, whatever you read in there. Standing wave ratios, and that's affectionately called the SWERS. I don't know if anybody, does anybody have any questions?
You know, this is KC3HVA again. Way back in the old days before cable TV, we used to have these lousy antennas up on a pole with a rotator, and they had 300-ohm twin lead. And on distant stations, when signal levels were low, they kind of had snow on the screen and all that sort of nonsense. And you could make a little, what they called a stub tuner, to help match the impedance of the antenna and the lead-in to what the set wanted to see. And to do that, all you did was take a piece of twin lead, maybe 3 feet long or less, and attach it in parallel to where your twin lead from the antenna came down. And then you take a little piece of tin foil or aluminum foil and wrap it around the twin lead, your little stub, and just slide it up and down until the picture cleared up the best, and then you just left it there, or you could cut the cable there and solder the ends together there, and you had a little stub tuner. So we haven't talked about tuning, but we've talked about the need for it. That was an easy way to tune the twin lead on these old TV sets. Over.
You are fabulous, Jan. I forgot all about that. You're absolutely right. And that was so cool to be able to tune an antenna like that. And you tuned it not because you had all this neat stuff laying around with precision instruments and all this. You just looked at the TV. Is the snow out yet? No, it could use it. Go down. That's perfect. Stop right there. That's where it should be. And it's amazing how effective just experimenting with it can be. And that's exactly right what Jan said. You could tune the antenna by deciding how long that thing needs to be. Or I've never tried it with foil. That's a neat idea. I'd like to see how well that works. Not so much anymore because NTSC is gone.
Yep.
Unless you're going to go overseas. It's all digital now. And so it's a little bit different animal. You can still get those gains. I'm sorry, go ahead.
The other thing, if you lived in a city and you didn't need much of an antenna, you could have rabbit ears, they called them. I don't know. I assume everybody knows what rabbit ears are. They were just two pieces of antenna, like a car antenna, came out at an angle. And you could vary the angle from vertical of the two little antennas, and you could vary the length of them. So you might play with making the length, you know, make them the same on both sides and just shortening them up or lengthening them. And then in the middle, you had a little U-shaped piece of wire with a slider on it, and that was your little single stub tuner. You took that little cross bar on the slider and just slid it up and down after you'd done everything else. So you had about three ways to tune the antenna. You could change the length of both arms of the antenna. You could change the angle between them for the polarization. And you could change the impedance matching by sliding that little slider up and down. Over.
And most people had no idea how that all worked. And they would just put it out this way and put it out that way and say, oh, this thing doesn't work. I wasted my money. And in reality, they just didn't know how to tune it. And that was a shame because, again, you're absolutely right. This seems to be a recurring theme, Jan.
Okay.
I think it's time to go ahead and stop there. We've got about 2 minutes, so I'll start my spiel. Does anybody have any questions before we close the net? I want to encourage everybody to get in touch with your local ham clubs. Find you a local ham mentor who can help you do things. There's all kinds of classes going on right now as we speak in different cities across the United States. Go get in one. And you'll learn all this stuff with somebody standing at a board and actually explaining it properly to you instead of just listening to me talk out of a book. Much better when I'm there and I can answer questions and you're there and you can learn. So this is the NLA HamsNet. This net starts at 8 p.m. Eastern Time every Wednesday, afternoon, evening, however you want to say it. We talk about all things NLA-ish and Hamish. And my name is Terry from Colorado. My call sign, my call sign is KI0RE, Kilo India 0, Romeo Echo. And I thank everyone for participation. Thank you, Jan, for putting in your 2 cents there. I think it's excellent. I appreciate it. I hope everybody has a nice day. And the net is now closed.